So, I've already brought you to Admiral Nimitz's office, which used to be my office decades after it was his office. Brought you to all over Pearl Harbor. Now we're in the Nimitz House in Yerba Linda Island, near Treasure Island. Admiral Nimitz, after he retired, he never really retired. He was a five-star admiral, which meant he stayed on the active duty roster throughout his life until he died. Settled, not retired, in the San Francisco Bay Area. It was the Kensington area above Berkeley, because he was a regent at Berkeley University. He's very happy about that, because that's where he established the ROTC unit earlier in his life, and he loved the Bay Area. He wasn't going to go back to Texas for whatever reason. So he spent his last years here. He loved that house in Kensington at above the University of California at Berkeley. But when his health began to fail, the Navy said, look, in order to take care of you, we need to move you closer to the Navy clinic. So they convinced him to move here to this house, and we'll show you a video of the house itself. And this is basically where he lived out the remaining years of his life until he died. He died in this house. There's some controversy about which room he died in. The bedroom was upstairs, but it's his daughter, who was a Dominican nun, of all things, says that he didn't die in the bedroom, that after he became unable to really move around and ambulatory, despite the fact they put an elevator in the house, he had to stand up to use the elevator, they moved a bed down here into this library, which is where we are now. And this is the room that he's reported to have died in, although I can't understand why there's this dispute. But in my imagining, you've got the Admiral surrounded by his books, putting a big wall of Pacific over there with a bed facing this wall with a big map of the Pacific. That's the way I imagine it anyway. And it's kind of remarkable to be in this house. You know, he touched these things, he lived in here. And the fact that after the Navy moved out of Treasure Island and shut down our operations here, the city of San Francisco took it, and as governments often do, fairly ignored it, and the house is extremely run down. It's tragic, because this should be a national landmark, and it's so sad that the house is in such poor condition. No running water, no working plumbing, and all of that. So I call upon the city of San Francisco to do the right thing for what someone they claim to be their favorite son, Admiral Nimitz. So I'm with the grandchildren of Admiral Spruance. And so David Bogart and Ellen Spruance Holscher. You know, here we are at the Golden Gate National Cemetery. And, you know, it's kind of remarkable that Admiral Nimitz, as he was failing, didn't use his authority to declare a demand that an exception be made. He actually wrote a letter and said, you know, I realize that this is against policy, but if I could request an exception to the policy, I'd like to be buried alongside your grandfather, Admiral Spruance, Admiral Charles Lockwood, who commanded the submarine force during the Pacific War, and Richmond Kelly Turner was the fourth one. And so we have varying opinions of Admiral Turner, but we're all aligned on the supremacy of your grandfather's command of the Fifth Fleet when he was operating. So, I mean, you both knew your grandfather, obviously. And I'll start with you, David. What kind of memories do you have of him?
I didn't spend a lot of time with him, but the memories I have, visiting him in his home that we now live in, on our way to and from Japan in the mid-50s, 60s, 50s. And he was kind. He was, he wasn't very gregarious with us. Mm-hmm. He was reserved, but Ellen has had a lot more experience with her. She's Yeah. So he also visited us when my dad was stationed at Quonset Point, headquarters there.
Your dad was on active duty, so you were Navy.
Yeah, we moved all over, so
Yeah.
we would, right. And he did come out in the, when we were stationed, this would have been in 62, 63, stationed at Quonset Point. He and my grandmother would come out in the fall to visit us and then go look at the foliage in New England foliage.
Always
And
beautiful.
we, the quarters we were in at that time had one bathroom, and that we were three children. And so, and they stayed with us. And that was a bit of a challenge to share that bathroom with so many people. But I think Ellen probably can speak more to the personal side of our grandfather.
Yes, you knew him as a kind man, but you didn't have a lot of experience
No, yeah, I
roughhousing
do
and playing with
remember he used to say, "Look at me and say, can you wiggle your ears?" And and he then his ears would start to move. He
Seriously,
actually could do
really.
that. He could do it.
I can't imagine the Fifth Fleet commander entertaining his grandchildren by wiggling his ears, but what a great story that is. And Ellen, you did obviously know much, you were with him much more.
Well, we had my brother and I had two complete summers with our grandparents, and that allowed my father to change duty stations and set up their new, whether it was Washington, D.C. or Coronado. And so we would spend the summer, and when we were the younger, when we were younger, on the youngest time we were there, we just played every day.
And he would
And
play with you?
well, no, we would go for
Oh,
walks.
I
He
see.
had to, he would get up at 5:30 in the morning. He got up at 5:30 in the morning every morning. He took a cold shower, and he had a very elaborate coffee ritual with very elaborate equipment. Coffee from Kona that a friend sent to him from Kona Coffee. And he would start that, and then
He
he would,
roasts his own beans.
yes,
Is that
he
right?
roasted, he would roast them. He'd roast them, and he has this thing, and he'd be outside in the backyard swinging this thing in this, and it, to cool it off after the beans
Roasted.
were roasted. And he would take a walk by himself early in the morning and then come back with the newspaper. And then my grandmother had one huge, large coffee cup with coffee. And so finally, when I got to be about 16, I was allowed to have the coffee because it was the best in the world. And then we'd always have another walk or two every day. And he worked in the garden every day, laid the brick patio and the brick walkway himself.
With Mr.
And
Shoemaker,
he worked with a
right?
wonderful Mr. Shoemaker, the gardener, who worked and they gardened, and he had compost bins. He composted, and he had certain things he would have at each meal.
Always
You remember
sweet.
the lunch? Triscuits, peanut butter, cottage cheese, fruit, and a glass of buttermilk. Now that, if he wouldn't do that, if he were at the old at the Capital City Club in Monterey,
Old Capitol
old
Club.
Capital Club, he would have whatever they had. But yes.
Well, he and Admiral Nimitz, when they were, living together, actually in the house in Macalapa, when he was Admiral Nimitz's chief of staff, had a very elaborate walking ritual as well, where they would walk for miles and miles and miles, and or they would go swimming in Hawaii in the open ocean and just swim for miles and in cold water. I've done that. It's 72 degrees. It's not warm. Yeah, get your swimming pool down to 72 degrees and try swimming in it. But they would do this, and
I
they
think
were.
that was Nimitz that got him into swimming, wasn't
Yeah,
it? Yeah.
I think
I think
everybody
that
in the
was.
academy has to swim. So it, but I think you're right. From that standpoint, it was Nimitz that got him in. And they were kindred spirits, I think. I think that's one of the reasons Nimitz wanted him so badly to stay at Singpak Fleet headquarters. But he realized that he needed him out in the fleet as a fleet commander. Did he ever talk about the war to you two?
Not to me. that I recall.
Not really. But we had many over the years. When we were there in the summers, they had parties a lot, and they would go to parties. And of course, there was a lot in the background talking about the Navy and remembering, because there were mainly military friends. So I don't know whether I received any of that by osmosis or not, but probably they were remembering friends, but I don't remember any serious discussions, you know, about
battles.
Yeah, right.
Marianas, and then, turkey shoot or anything like that.
Right.
Yeah. It's so interesting.
Yeah.
It's so good. But how would you characterize Admiral Spruance as a man? I mean, if you were to summarize it in a short statement.
Oh, my goodness. Well, he was very, very kind. He was quiet. He had a wonderful laugh that really wasn't, it was not a huge laugh, but it was a, it was his, he would all sort of shake from top to bottom with a very controlled sense of joy. So he was inquisitive. He played classical music every night, or Harry Belafonte, and he sat in the rocking chair that was given to him when he was 7 years old. And my grandmother was dying to get it moved out and have her pretty furniture be more prominent. But he insisted until the day he died, that chair was where he sat, in the little rocking chair that he received when he was seven.
Mm-hmm.
So
he did have a twinkle in his eye when he was amused.
Mm.
And a good sense of humor.
Yeah.
Subtle, but good.
Uh-huh. Yeah. If I sound like he's one of my idols, it's because he is. I mean, from the naval perspective, but as a man as well. And this is why I admire both him and Admiral Nimitz so much, because not only, in my opinion, were they number one and number two best admirals in the history of the United States Navy, but also they were good men, good human beings, not pretentious, and no ego. There was no guile, right? They were what they were, right? And great role models for not just naval officers, but all military officers. And we need more Spruances. We talked previously about the fact that Admiral Nimitz wanted to be buried alongside those he felt closest to during the war. He is a five-star admiral. He could have demanded, used his rank, gone to the Secretary of Defense, done all kinds of things to get permission to be buried here. The Army rules, Army generally runs military, or Veterans Administration generally run these cemeteries. The rules do not allow somebody to request a specific burial spot. What Admiral Nimitz did was he wrote a very humble letter saying, I know that this is against policy, but I'd like to know if I could ask for an exception to that policy, because I'd like to be buried alongside Raymond Spruance, the commander of 5th Fleet, Charles Lockwood, who we've talked about so much, the commander of the Pacific Fleet Submarine Force, and somebody we talk about occasionally, Richmond Kelly Turner. Now, we've said good things about Admiral Turner and not so good things about Admiral Turner, but Admiral Nimitz liked him enough that he wanted to be part of this group in death. And here it is, just the way he requested. Okay, and the wives are alongside as well. Admiral Turner's wife, Admiral Lockwood's wife, Admiral Spruance's wife, Margaret, and of course, Admiral Nimitz's wife, Catherine. And how can I not say something about Admiral Lockwood? We talked so much about the impact that Admiral Lockwood's submarine force had on the conduct of the war, starving Japan and shortening the war by diminishing Japan's ability to fight. This man commanded the greatest submarine force At that time in the history of the world, I'd like to think that the submarine force continued to get stronger after the war ended. But we're never going to have as many submarines as Admiral Lockwood commanded, nor, hopefully, will we require of the submarine force the kind of effort that we needed from them during World War II, because hopefully a war like that will never happen again.